So good morning to a priest, a rabbi, and a youth director. As this morning, Father Anderson is on assignment somewhere. It's a secret assignment.
It's a secret assignment.
We don't really know where it is.
Top secret.
But it is great
it's
that
for
we.
God.
It is for God. Yeah. Absolutely. So we do have on our show today. We're going to be looking at what inspires our kids, our children for youth group. What brings them in? What inspires them? And what the success is. With a lot of our programs. So we do have Alexis Stuckey here, who is our youth director at St. Mary's Church.
Yes, thanks for having me.
So Alexis, I think today we're going to talk about the whole formation of youth group, what brings our kids in, how do they become inspired, mm-hmm. what some of the challenges that we face today, and how we can kind of press forward.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot out there. It's ever-changing, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is. So it is great to have you on the program, and we look forward to your perspective and certainly your insight as a professional and as a mother of children who have gone through youth group, just to kind of hear your perspective and your insight.
Thanks so much. I'm grateful to be here.
Good. So without further ado, we present a priest, a rabbi, and a youth director.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents a priest and a rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, Stuart. We are here this morning in a very wet South Florida experience here in the studios. But it is with great pleasure that we bring to you another episode of A Priest, A Rabbi, and A Youth Director. So it is with great pleasure, although our priest is not here today. I think he is, Father Anderson is on assignment elsewhere. So we hope he is listening and giving us lots of blessings and prayers this morning. But it is with great pleasure this morning that we welcome to the studio Alexis Stuckey, who is the youth director at St. Mary's.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So it is wonderful to have you here in the studio. And I think today we're going to talk about your profession and what really attracts our youth in today's world and understanding of community and coming together. So, Alexis, again, it is wonderful to have you. I know we do a lot of great stuff together, both at St. Mary's and at Temple Beit Haim.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, without further ado, just wanted to introduce you to the studio and to the hundreds of thousands of millions of viewers and listeners that are
worldwide.
Joining us today.
I really hope those numbers are accurate.
I believe they are. We are. We are in, I want to say, maybe 30 countries around the world.
That's awesome.
Many states, if not most states in America. Mm-hmm. And so let's go a little bit backwards a little bit. So Alexis, if you don't mind just kind of telling our listeners who you are and what your background is and, you know, what brought you to, you know, this ministry of working with our youth.
Sure. So I've been doing this for about 10 years. I'm married. I have two boys. I have a background in fine arts from South Carolina, a school called the College of Charleston, little liberal arts school that's gotten a lot bigger. Never thought in a million years that I'd be doing youth ministry, and volunteered a lot at St. Mary's. We've been going to church there for about 21 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, long time. We were definitely, you know, very young in the congregation when we joined, and it's grown extensively, but I was volunteering with kids, and we had an interim rector, priest, at the time, and he came to me one day and said, you know, you're pretty good with these kids, and we'd like to pay you. And I said, okay. I was a stay-at-home mom at the time, you know, and a 10-hour-a-week job turned into a 40-hour-a-week job pretty quickly, because shortly after that, we hired Father Todd, and you know, lots of wonderful assistant priests afterwards. And then the church just continued to grow and grow and grow with young families and students. And so I started out with about, I'd say, 8 students, middle and high school, a little over 10 years ago. And, you know, those numbers have gone up and down, you know, with things going on with kids and different shifts in the culture of youth ministry over the years. But yeah, so that's kind of how that happened. It was by accident. So, yeah. And I love it. I love it. I do love teenagers. But it wasn't something that I was officially trained to do. Like, I didn't go to seminary. And Yeah.
So when you started within the youth group understanding at the church, presumably you've seen numbers kind of wane.
Sure.
You know, we have you know, a lot of kids that go into the youth group with certain expectations. So from the church's perspective, you know, what type of programs do you guys offer? You know, is it just solely with St. Mary's, or is there other opportunities to partner with other organizations?
So much opportunity. So in fact, I don't do anything really other than confirmation, which we have a team for. I don't do anything that's officially Episcopalian. It's all just biblically and gospel centered. So that way any kid from any church any day can come and be fed within our group. Because like even for my own biological children, let's say that, you know, our youth group meeting is on Sunday night and they've got an activity, but they want to go to TC3 on a Tuesday night, I would hope that they would be able to attend that church and be welcomed there as well. So I want kids that are churched, unchurched, Episcopalian, Methodist, Baptist, whatever they want to do, they're welcome to join us.
And when you were growing up, I mean, did you experience youth group? Were you active?
I did, especially when I was younger. So middle school and beginning of high school, I did. We went to a big, very big Methodist church when I was a kid. Back and forth, Methodist, Baptist, and then primarily Methodist. But I did go to youth group there.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And then when I got into high school and started doing things like dating and having activities, not as much anymore. Right.
Yeah,
so which is a trend that we all, you know, you and I see within our congregations as well.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. So, you know, we did a program with you guys a year ago.
Yes.
Which was amazing. We did, when it came to Passover, kind of our story of liberation and our story of freedom as we transitioned from being slaves in Egypt to free people, we brought both of our youth groups together.
Yes.
And we did just an amazing program of teaching St. Mary's about Passover, and then we shifted gears because it happened to coincide with Easter. And having that conversation.
Yeah.
And you know, it's been a while since we've done it, obviously since last Easter, but the buzz was just amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You know, just seeing kids hyper engaged and just really wanting that experience to learn and experience about the other.
Yeah, and you can feel it with kids. I mean, you can immediately feel if there's an energy with them or not, you know? When you're in a room with a bunch of teenagers.
Absolutely.
You can
tell
good, not so good, pretty quickly with them. And I think the energy there was fantastic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you know, as we think about, you know, the challenges that exist within youth groups today, and you know, I'll speak from a Judaic perspective, you know, we have a very strong base nationally. So we as a reform movement are housed under what we call the Union for Reform Judaism, and they encompass, I mean, tens of thousands of kids. And we do youth group events locally, regionally, nationally, across the country, and it's very strong. One of the other things that's very strong is our camping. And you know, how does that work with you guys in terms of, do you guys do summer camps? Do we?
Not as much. I mean, we do a summer mission trip. So our high school students are eligible, if they're entering 9th through 12th grade, to do a summer mission trip, provided that they, you know, perform all the necessary steps to get there, which might mean coming to youth group and doing some fundraising and their participation level. But yes, we do that for high school, but we haven't so far for middle school. I took middle schoolers. I take that back. On a mission trip my first year at St. Mary's and said that I would not do it again. They were just not ready. I mean, but it wasn't camp either. It was a work trip, and they were not ready.
Oh, well.
They were not ready.
And where do your students go?
So we've gone a lot of different places. We've done more of a camp work experience most years through student life, through group, through team effort. They're like nationally known, very evangelistic Christian organizations that put together a full camp with worship, with the church, with the experience with lots of kids, thousands sometimes of kids from all over the country, and then the work experience also. But this last year we went to Quito, Ecuador.
Oh, wow.
And that we went for 10 days, and that was hands down the best experience formatively and work-wise. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Christian and I talk about this a lot because people say to you, why do you have to take them overseas? Why can't you, you know, there are people in needs in the Bahamas, mm-hmm. right? But there something happens when you take kids somewhere with people who don't look like them, and there's a huge language barrier, and they don't live like them, and there's a real vulnerability that happens. So this year was a big one.
And are to do like a mission trip to, mm-hmm. to Ecuador.
Yes.
Are there expectations for our kids?
A lot.
Okay.
Yes. So I can only take 24, mm-hmm. And that includes chaperones. And so there's a big fundraising expectation, and outside of St. Mary's, not just within the church, but outside. Mm-hmm. And then requirements to attend youth group and the various activities that we have around the trip mm-hmm. are required.
So you know, and I know talking with Father Anderson, just mm-hmm. you know, the expectation of when our kids do some of these mission trips
sure.
is, you know, the expectation, you know, from a Judaic perspective is tikkun olam, to repair, to mend the world, to make the world mm-hmm. a better mm-hmm. and more harmonious place, and to really get our hands dirty.
Sure.
So, you know, with Ecuador, what were some of the experiences that your kids faced?
I mean, definitely the work experience, but the culture and the people in Ecuador, they are very relational. Mm. Just as they're very groupistic, and we're very individualistic. Mm. So that was a big change and shift. And I believe that that's how God wants us to live mm-hmm. with one another, and not be so self-focused or guarded or put up the walls or fearful. But it's just, they're just wide open in Ecuador, and it's just an awesome, awesome place. Yeah.
Do you guys have plans for this year?
We're trying to go back.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And in fact, the kids have relationships with the kids in Ecuador. Mm-hmm. There's a huge youth group with the church there. It's an Episcopal church. And we're all still in contact with one another, which is really cool. We haven't had that with the other trips where you stay in touch.
Okay. And is there follow-up that's done after?
There's a lot of follow-up. So we've had, you know, obviously a lot of sharing within the church. We did weeks worth of testimonies where the kids would get up as part of the sermon or the announcement, depending on which service it was mm-hmm. and how long the sermon was. Mm. But they would get to share in their experience.
Wow.
And it really had a profound effect on the congregation, because the mission experience isn't just for the participants, it's for the body, mm-hmm. you know, so the entire church body. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really cool.
So in your experience, mm-hmm. you know, with working with youth,
yeah.
what's the secret?
Oh, gosh. I think the secret is that there isn't one mm-hmm. and that you have to be very open-minded, and that it's always changing because, you know, I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves that the formation of faith comes from us, and that's not the truth.
Mm-hmm.
The formation of faith comes from at home, right? It comes from parents. The emphasis has to come from the parents and the families. And we're just there as the supporting staff,
mm-hmm.
You know? So, but, you know, we have to shift our expectations of what youth ministry, whether it's, you know, at the temple or at the church, of what that looks like, mm-hmm. because it's constantly changing based on the needs of the kids and the culture.
And I think even today with our culture and our society mm-hmm. today, I mean, you know, I know when we talked about this the other day, you know, our kids are so over-programmed.
Oh, overextended, yeah.
And you know, I mean, yeah. I remember as a kid, I mean, although growing up in the North, which obviously right now our seasons are changing, mm-hmm. I mean, all you have to do is just watch the news yesterday where it was, you know, in Colorado, for example, where
yeah.
it was 80 degrees. And that they woke up to a massive snowstorm.
Yeah.
And then this weekend will be in the 70s. You know, I remember growing up that, you know, around this time in October, and especially when it came to Halloween, mm-hmm. you know, our temperatures would shift and the culture would change. And, you know, I remember as a kid, my parents would say, what are you doing inside? Go out. Go build a snow fort.
Oh,
go
yeah.
build something with bricks. Just get out of the house. Whereas today, whether it be, you know, kids doing video games, mm-hmm. which I'm very cognizant and very, I'm very pleased that none of my kids like video games.
My kids loved it. We got rid of it, though.
Mm-hmm.
It was too much of a distraction.
And you know, it's funny because
yeah.
I grew up in a family of three other brothers, and
yep.
they were very big in video games.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember that notion of you're being so antisocial.
Yeah.
You don't talk. You guys sit there. You play, I don't know, Madden's football. Yeah. You play whatever. And I remember my parents always saying, because we were never overly programmed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up in the North, so hockey was very big. Nothing I hated more than to get up on a Sunday morning at 5 a.m. and get to the ice rink. And I mean, it was painful. I hated it. But then growing up, you know, we had baseball. It was nothing really during the week.
There weren't as many options.
No, there weren't as many options. And I think there was something there about really taking that family time of what we learned, you know, throughout the week and really having that precious time that we had with our families. Whereas today, you know, whether our kids are at dance or at soccer or at sports or everything else, and the extracurricular activities that we're really challenged by it. And we see it at the temple, especially where we're trying to encourage kids, but there's so many other options out there.
And these are great things that we want our kids to be doing. I mean, these extracurricular activities are wonderful community things that we want our kids to be doing, but then it's the challenge of where does the faith fit in?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was always the challenge. I mean, you know, as one growing up, my mother had always said, you will go to synagogue every opportunity you have because this is non-negotiable. And I think today we see a shift that has happened.
Yeah.
You know, especially from a Judaic perspective, I remember growing up and saying what we practice at home, whether it be lighting the candles and welcoming in Shabbat or going, you know, spending that time with family and engaging in a conversation, that precious opportunity seems to be pushed more to the periphery, whereas in the past it was what we learned at home was remodeled in, you know, religious education. Whereas today we hope that what we teach in the religious school, that, you know, we try and encourage our families and say, try and model this at home if you can. Because, you know, those values and those ethics that we hold so sacred and so dear really should be reinforced. And especially with the youth group of what we learn at home, what we learn at temple or church, that gets reinforced through social opportunities and activities. Do you see is there the same kind of breakdown and shift within the church as
Sure, absolutely. And I mean, all the statistics show that, you know, if the kids grow up with the faith and the families are showing that this is important, then they stick with it, right? So, I mean, it still holds true that the greatest role models and influencers in a child's life are the parents. So, you know, what the parents model is what the kids are going to model, good and bad. I mean, we've all experienced that within our own families, right? Our kids get our bad stuff too. But yeah, I just think there are a lot of distractions out there. You know, we've been, you know, definitely part of that as well. Our kids are active athletes. But I think, you know, back to Ecuador, when we were in Ecuador, nothing happens in Ecuador that doesn't happen as a family unit. So we were having a conversation with one of our leaders who happened to be only 18 or 19 years old. She was one of our hosts for the 10 days that we were there. And she said, we eat together. And I said, well, but, you know, well, we want to eat together, but my kids have, you know, this and that, and my husband's working late. And she said, but it doesn't matter. We eat together. And I said, but what if your dad has to work till 8 o'clock? She said, then we don't eat till 8 o'clock.
Wow.
But we wait for each other and we always eat together. And I thought, gosh, that is completely backwards from what we do in America, right? So we make a meal work around whatever our kids have, right? So our schedules are, you know, essentially driven by what our kids determine, which isn't wrong, but it's just how it is. And so it definitely makes scheduling youth activities. But I think the more that we can reach the parents and come alongside them, you know, to help them put the faith first, because we always say, you know, if Jesus isn't getting your first, he's getting your leftovers, right? And is that what you want to give God? Do you want to give God what's left, right? Your exhaustion and, you know, your frustrations and all of that, or do you want to give him the best off the top? So it's a struggle.
And it's so interesting what you raise, because I think we very much experience it, and I think it is generational, is that shift really has occurred in the last 30 some odd years.
Yeah.
I remember growing up, it was, you know, my father came home, we all shared
for him
dinner.
Of course.
And it wasn't the convenience food. It wasn't the whatever in the freezer, let's make. It was, you know, we broke bread we broke bread together.
Together as a family.
Yeah, as a family. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's an 8-year age gap between myself and my youngest brother. And I remember with my older brother and my other brother that, you know, we would have dinner together. And it was nice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when my youngest brother came along, it was suddenly, well, you want this, you want that. Okay, we'll eat at 5, you'll have at 6. My mother's famous line, which she'll say to my kids, are the kitchen is closed.
The kitchen's closed.
You know, and I think that there's something there, you know, generationally that says with so many different opportunities that are out there, in the past it was we do this together and it's sacrosanct. That's mm-hmm. just what we do. Whereas mm-hmm. today it's, well, let's accommodate.
Yeah.
And I think that accommodation is great in one end, but destructive on the other.
Absolutely.
You know, that we're really not, we're not sanctifying time. Mm-hmm. We're saying, well, we understand what goes on. Let's make concessions so that we can all do this in random times mm-hmm. throughout the course of, you know, our busy week. So, you know, when you were, you know, a young mother with your children, what was the emphasis for you and certainly for your husband?
I mean, so we definitely went to church and went to Sunday school and stuff like that. But I mean, we were as busy as the next family during the week. My mm-hmm. husband's always worked a lot, you know, not always locally. So eating together was, you know, sometimes it would be me and the boys, but sometimes I'd leave my husband a plate in the microwave and he ate when he got home because we were all asleep. Mm-hmm. You know, so we were definitely kind of passing each other with regularity. But that's slowed down now. I mean, my kids are grown. Mm-hmm. So it's easy also for me to say now, well, you know, this is important when I, you know, when I have the time more readily available to me and my son drives and my oldest is in college. And so it's easier to say that when you're not the one that's doing it.
Absolutely.
And living it, right?
Well, we always say, especially my wife, we commented, I talked about this last night with her, and I said, I'm really blessed that I have 3 kids that don't eat because, you know, so I took my kids the other day to Panera. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, well, what do you want to eat? And, you know, one of my kids said mac and cheese. The other
one have good mac and cheese.
They do. And the other one said, well, I'll have the chicken noodle soup. And I said to my youngest, well, what do you want? She said, I just want bread.
I
said, but bread's not dinner. She said, well, that's what I want.
Yep.
So she eats next to nothing, come home, and, you know, that's it. Yeah. There's no real challenge there. But they, but you know, it's really interesting when we break out the conversation about the youth, because I think in some semblance we're also looking for buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think a generation ago, it was the buy-in from our children to be excited about it, and not to put that on the back burner to say that that's not relevant or important today, but I think the shift today is to get our parents inspired.
Sure.
Because without the buy-in from the parents, you know, I could send my kid all I want to youth group. They could be slightly inspired. Mm-hmm. If I'm not excited about, oh, I got to drive over that bridge, I got to take them into our respective communities, if they see my energy is low, they're going to feel it, and they're not going to be as excited. And I think today when we do buy-in with our parents to say we have this amazing opportunity, mm-hmm. but you know, my concern has always been, is the emphasis too much on parental buy-in, and should the shift go back to that model of buy-in with our students and our kids? Because without them, we don't have a youth group.
That's true. And I think it's always shifting back and forth. I mean, we've had a lot of ups and downs with youth group at St. Mary's. I mean, when I first started, you know, we had between 6 and 10 kids. Then about 5 years later, you know, I had a staff of 6 because we were having 50, 60 kids a week.
Wow.
You know, packing the place out. And then it just kind of dropped again, you know. And so it's always changing. And I think it's, we have to adapt to the culture of the kids and the families, too. We started youth group this year with a great program doing Youth Alpha, which I don't know if Christian's talked on here about, Father Christian, excuse me, about the Alpha program over at the 10th Street Community in Stewart. But it has taken off, and the parents love it. So we thought, well, we'll do Alpha Youth. They've wanted this. They've asked for this. We started it. The numbers were great. About 2 weeks later, no kids showed up, like zero, like zero kids next week. Zero kids showed up. So I thought, well, gosh, you know, we've got to figure out how am I going to get these kids here? And I thought, maybe they don't want to come here. Maybe they don't want to come to church. Maybe mm-hmm. they don't want to come to this youth building. They come to church on Sundays. Maybe they don't want to come back on Wednesday. So we started a little thing called CSM. It's a coffee shop ministry. We meet at Three Baristas in Stewart on Wednesdays at 4:30, 3:30 for any leaders or adult leaders that might want to come early. And it's taken off. But that will change, mm-hmm. right? In a year, that might not work. It might work for 3 years, but it will eventually mm-hmm. not work because of their schedules, their parents' schedules, or whatever else it is that they've got going on.
And in your experience, I know we've seen the same, mm-hmm. Especially at the Temple. I mean, we started a program a couple of years ago called Hebrew High, mm-hmm. which was, you know, from a synagogue perspective, you know, we train our kids to, live by Jewish values and Jewish ethics all the days of their life. And, you know, post bar and bat mitzvah, there really is no real program.
Right.
And back in the 1850s, you know, a big synagogue in New York City and also in Charleston, you know, decided, hang on, if there's nothing, and of course, bat mitzvah didn't exist back then, but, you know, the understanding that once they become bar mitzvah, that's it. It's kind of their entry or exit out of community. So back in the 1850s, you know, a bunch of women decided and said, we need to encourage our boys to further their own Jewish education. Mm-hmm. So we created a program called Confirmation, which is now in virtually every synagogue in the world. And the process was to take our kids from after bar bat mitzvah, give them more Jewish education, inspire them, and at the same time, you know, talk hot button issues in mm-hmm. Judaism and society, and not so much from a traditional perspective, but where they are at that given moment. Mm-hmm. So we started a program a couple of years ago called Hebrew High. Once a month, our kids join me for dinner in a selected restaurant around Stewart or Palm City or Jensen Beach, and really just for, you know, there's 2 hours to really sit there and engage in conversation. And, you know, we've had kids, you know, anywhere from 10 to 15 to 20 kids show up, which is amazing.
Which is great.
But, you know, we always try and gauge it by the first one is always the honeymoon. Mm-hmm. If you show up for the second, okay, we have a slight pattern here. And then after the third, we realize, okay, we've got you. And the grabbing in, I think, is really the most challenging.
Yeah.
You know, we can throw a program, which is great. But the question is, how do we keep inspiring our kids to want to be there? And I think you guys have done a really good job with the coffee shop ministry. And part of the understanding—
For now.
Sure.
For now. But do you find also, like, around bar and bat mitzvah time, pre and post with the confirmation, do you find that around those mandatory things that attendance is really good and then it just kind of drops mm-hmm. off?
Absolutely.
Because we find the same thing within our programs. Mm-hmm. So during confirmation, it's mandatory that they're there. But then you may or may not see some of those kids at youth group before or after that. Around the mission trip time, the kids that really want to participate mm-hmm. in that and the families that really want to participate, they make those things a priority. But then you may or may not see those kids, some of them,
absolutely.
You know, depending and on what they've
think,
got going
I think,
on.
Alexis, I think you bring in a really interesting point, because mm-hmm. I think today, especially with religious life or community life, it is how do we make our church, our synagogues, how do we make them a priority?
Right.
And I think that that's a really big challenge, given all the other extenuating stuff that's going on.
Sure.
How do we find the time? I remember as a kid, you know, I did youth group. I wasn't overly involved because the events that they had at the synagogue, just they weren't interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, so we have a shulin. Great. So you lock me into my synagogue. We watch a film or we do whatever. But it wasn't really of any interest. But you take me to the fun park
right.
or the water park. Oh, you've got me now.
Yeah.
And then the question, I remember as a kid, always that delicate balance of it's, I always found it really amazing how the rabbis and our youth group directors were able to infuse in some way, you know, religious understanding or a text study or some values and ethics that were put in subtly, but at the same time gave me the experience of this was a great event
right.
and I loved it. Whether we went to the trampoline park or we went to, you know, we don't have a Six Flags in Canada, but we have a national theme park, you know, to go there and to really, because really what is the purpose of youth group?
Well, it's for their formation.
It's formation. It's for sociability. Yeah. It's for them to interact. It's for them really, you know, from it, you know, I'm sure it's the same in the church. But for us as the synagogue is to be able to say, you share something that not everyone shares together. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you are part of a larger group that when you're out in the world, that you always have that secret society, that right. you're part of something that connects you in ways that not every other place has the opportunity to do.
Yeah. We do something called a Eutucharist. I don't know if Christians talk to you about this, but the band, we do a Eucharist at a service, and all the music is to the band U2. And Christian has this famous line that he says, where he says, you come for U2 and you leave with Jesus. And so that's kind of how we feel about youth group. Come for the fun and you leave with Jesus. So it's finding that right balance, because I think essentially kids do come for the fun, but kids want more, right? They're looking for something. They're looking for their purpose. They're looking for something even outside of their families and their parents, even if they have a great home life. The rabbi and I were talking yesterday about the impact that adults have on young people outside of their parents. I know we've been very fortunate with our son, specifically our younger son, to have had, you know, incredible coaches, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, role models, and just these other male figures, specifically, because I'm raising males, who just have really led our son, McGuire, not just as a person, but with his faith. And for us to just really understand as adults the impact that we have on these kids that we may not even realize.
Absolutely.
How much they need that. And the opportunity to invite more people into that.
Absolutely.
You know, lay staff and just lay leaders. And because that's what they want. They want someone to listen to them. That's really what they want. They want to be heard.
It's so interesting when we look at it from a congregational perspective as well, in terms of what we as a collective community have done, you know, largely within our own generation.
Sure.
You know, I remember as a kid, you know, we do youth group events. I mean, there was no youth lounge. There was no youth opportunities. It was you meet in a social hall.
Yeah.
You do the program. And then, you know, there's a lot of planning and a lot of programming, but there was never really a space.
Well, the world was much more adult driven.
Absolutely.
Right. And now everything is much more youth driven. So there's so much opportunity in that.
Absolutely.
For us to...
You know, and I think there's so many creative ways that within synagogue and church life that we really can inspire and bring more of our kids in.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid, so I had to go to confirmation till 10th grade. It was non-negotiable. I mean, I went Monday nights, I went Wednesday nights, I went Saturday, and I went Sunday. And I remember my mom saying, it is a lot. and I remember, you know, complaining as a kid because, you know, my other friends did stuff all over the place and I wanted to be part of it. And my mother would say, no, unless you are on your deathbed, you're going.
Yep.
And there was something really, you know, look, I resisted, but many years later, I remember saying to my mom, thank you. You know, one of the things my synagogue did was to say, we will give you a stipend. We'll give you $1,000. And back then...
that's a lot.
We shouldn't even say back then. Even now, I mean, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And the synagogue had said, we will give you $1,000 on one condition. The one condition is that you use that $1,000, this is a long time ago, to go to a mission trip to Israel. And it was, I think there were like 30 of us that came from Toronto and 30 of us that came from central New York and Buffalo and those parts of western New York. And we all met up and we spent whatever it was, 8-9 weeks in Israel.
How wonderful.
Which was amazing.
So it was a scholarship, basically.
It was a scholarship, but the synagogue came back and said, there are conditions, there are strings attached. One was you must be involved with our youth group, which was, I'm so, looking back, I am so grateful to my synagogue for pushing me beyond my limit. Second was that we come back and we give, you know, kind of the understanding of we give back to community. So they said, look, you'll come back and you must student teach for 3 years.
Wow.
The first year you earn nothing. Call it voluntary. Second year was like $5 a week. And then the third year it was something like $10 a session, $15 a session. And their understanding was that, you know, pay it forward. Is that you come back, and after those 3 years, you are trained enough to become a full-fledged teacher, and then you give back to the community. Mm-hmm. And because I grew up in a major city, sure. as opposed to, you know, a small town where, you know, we see the challenges in my former community in upstate New York where, you know, by the time our kids get to the end of high school and college, they want to get out of the small town.
Yeah,
they want to go to the big cities like New York City or Boston or even Providence, Rhode Island, where we were relatively close to. But I grew up in a city of, you know, 3, 4, 5 million people. This is what people did. I mean, it was, you know, you lived there. So if you went to school in Toronto, you were available. And it was that way of giving back to the community.
And it's a great way to raise leadership.
Absolutely.
And the church, we call that discipleship.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I think part of that big push, you know, wasn't so much about, you know, teaching in a religious school or, you know, being present in those opportunities. It was really the youth group. Mm-hmm. You know, I have friends that we've been friends for, you know, 30, 40 years that we met at youth group. And it was just one of those things of, you know, remember when we did this thing 25 years ago, you know, how amazing it was, and still having those memories.
Yeah.
And I think that youth group is a challenge in some way to get our kids inspired and to bring them back. But at the same time, I think that there's something creative that we've done, especially in the last, you know, few decades, mm-hmm. that has really said there's so much that we can do.
And I think we have to focus on the quality over the quantity. It is
absolutely.
So easy to get bogged down with numbers. I mean, I do it because that's how you, mm-hmm. you know, that's how you gauge performance.
Absolutely.
Is in the statistics and in the growth. But I think if we can, you know, rather than having 15 kids come and play, if you have 4 kids that are there and they are wanting more and they're staying late, mm-hmm. you know, because they're asking questions about what you're teaching. I mean, that's
absolutely.
That's so, where the growth is.
So we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, kind of look at, you know, Alexis, as you mentioned, in terms of quality over quantity, and really what are some of the stumbling blocks that are placed before us? What have we done to really encourage and bring that forward? Any questions or any comments, concerns that our listeners have out there, please give us a call. Give us your perspective, your insight. If you can think back to your days in youth group and what inspired you, give us a call, 772-220-9788. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe. And please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here on Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was what do women really want in a man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asks, though, is that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained, over 50 hours of training, to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more the presence of Christ, or and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Welcome back, Stuart, to a rabbi and a youth director.
Hello.
Our priest
Sam's
is
the priest, yes.
Is
somewhere on location.
Somewhere on location. Maybe
actually,
maybe
he's just late.
He could be. No. He could be. You know, when we first started, you know, Father Anderson and I would meet, or at least seemingly we would tell to meet at the station around 8:15, 8:30. Of course, our show goes on at 9. And progressively, the timing got later and later.
Yeah. I can't give him a hard time about being late, though, because I run late myself.
Well, you were nice in time this morning.
I was, but it was a big effort on my end.
So to go back on the conversation that we've been engaging in for the last 45 minutes or so, in terms of looking at our youth groups and looking at our children and trying to give them an experience that is meaningful and worthwhile, and not just for the given moment, because I think the aim for youth group is not so much for the given moment itself, but for them to form from themselves a lifelong pursuit of love within community. So, you know, in your experience with the church and the work that you do, what are some of the challenges that you face?
So, obviously, attendance, I think, is the biggest one. And then I think relevant content is huge with them, because they want to talk hot topics. I mean, they do. It's on their mind. They're dealing with it in school. And having the right people. Mm-hmm. I've been really fortunate with leaders. I always say kids are like dogs. They can smell you if you like them or not, and it's pretty instantaneous whether or not, you know, they know if you're a teenager person or if you're not. So I think it's having the right people around them, and then whatever your content is of what you're teaching. And then the balance of that fun and where and who and what to teach.
Are there,
always changing.
In your experience doing a lot of the youth group stuff, are there topics that are off limits?
No.
Okay.
No. I might seek some priest guidance before we have... You know, we've had some conversations about that, you know, offline before we have those conversations with the students. But no, there are no. And they just ask. Sometimes they just ask. And you want kids to feel safe to be able to ask those questions that maybe they can't ask their parents or other adults in their lives.
And you know, looking at it, you know, from St. Mary's perspective, I mean, do you have breakdowns when it comes to youth group? I mean, we have... You know, we have youth group, we have junior youth group for those that are a little bit younger. You know, is there the same within?
There is. Right now, the CSM is a high school ministry. We are working to form a middle school ministry with a guy named Brett Jenkins. He does youth ministry with me. He's been in Barcelona and just got back. So we are going to be kicking off something for middle school probably in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So, but our middle school numbers have been really low. The high school numbers have been really high.
Interesting.
So I think the middle school kids are more overextended than the high school kids.
Yeah.
If I were to guess, just based off what I see on Facebook, you know.
But it's so interesting because...
Which is so real.
You know, it's so interesting because I see it from the perspective, especially with, you know, very young kids, is, you know, my kids at a whim will say, oh, I want to do soccer, I want to do this, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we try and accommodate as best we can. But I my wife and I are, you know, these parents that I do not want to over-program
my
kids.
Outnumbered.
We are. Yeah. We are.
So there's not one for each parent like we had.
No.
You've got that.
I've got
wild
card. The wild card, especially the youngest. But, you know, there's something really, really awesome about the ability, you know, for middle school kids. And I wonder how much of our middle school kids are directed by our parents as opposed to our high school students who are directed by themselves. that if this is of interest to me, and I love what you said before about it's about quality, not quantity.
Right, right.
Because I think, look, in today's world, we measure success by number.
Always.
As opposed to measuring success by the impact that these programs have on our kids. You know, and I love what you said, which is, you know, if I have four kids and they're super engaged within the program, that to me measures a tremendous success, as opposed to having 30, 40 kids, maybe half are not inspired, maybe half are only there and twiddling their thumbs or on their phones or
or they're there because their parents made them come. Right. Yeah. So,
you know, so looking at it from that angle, what is it that the church does to really inspire and to really make sure that the experience that we're giving for our kids is meaningful or worthwhile?
So I think having a lot of offerings, Father Christian's been really good about involving the youth in the service itself.
Okay.
So Sunday worship is obviously, you know, number one in the church, Saturday / Sunday, but we only have one Saturday service at all. The big shows happen on Sunday. So the more that we can get the kids involved in the service and serving and making it fun. I mean, not everything in life is going to be fun and engaging, but there are opportunities where church or any faith-based thing can be fun. It doesn't have to be boring. It doesn't have to be long. It doesn't. You don't have to sit there for 2 hours. You can get up, right? So I think the more engaging that we can make it and bringing the kids into it and letting them know, hey, this isn't my church. This is your church.
Yeah.
This is our church.
And I think that that's also the key within the success of our youth groups. Is also that kind of unwritten message. I know we say it, you know, publicly to our kids, which is whatever you reveal and whatever you say to us, at the end of the day, we're not going to go back and write a letter to your parents. We're not going to get them on the phone and say, you know what Billy said, which was rather distressing.
Yes.
You know, it is a safe space for our kids
to
explore
their
own challenges and identities. I mean, it's something that, especially given our youth, there is so much between our youth before they enter into, you know, adolescence or adulthood that, you know, I'm always reminded, you know, when I was in my early 20s, somebody had said to me, your 20s as opposed to your 30s are vastly different. And I'm just not,
okay.
I highly doubt it.
Right.
And of course, now being in 40s, there's a part of me that says, well, you were absolutely right. Mm-hmm. That even when I was, you know, 16 years old, and of course at 16, you think that you know the world. And
a 16-year-old boy, no way.
No way. You know, I know better than my parents. Yeah. I know better. You know, you don't understand. I mean, when I was a kid, I think I used to quote to my mom, Bob Dylan, and say, the times they are changing. You know, your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. And my mother's response was, I never listened to him in the 60s. I'll never listen to him now, you know, and using that. But I think that there was something there of when we're teenagers, that notion that we are invincible, that nothing can harm us, that we know everything. And what better opportunity to know everything than with other of my peers who know everything?
Sure.
And to be part of that community together that spills outside of the synagogue or outside of the church. And to be able to really explore that together. You know, and we see this especially in the synagogue where we have such a vast array of different personalities come together. But at the end of the day, there's one unifying understanding that they all share, which is, you know, from our perspective, we're Jews.
Right.
Or, you know, in your case, you know, we're Episcopal, you know, Christians. That bring us together, that we share in a sacred moment that goes beyond the walls of this sanctuary to be able to say, when we're out in public, oh, I know him.
Right.
You know, my daughters see this all the time. It's great that, you know, Palm City has a like all the other elementary schools have a dress code, right? You got to wear those shirts.
Thank heavens, right?
So my kids are out in Publix and, oh, Dad, I know him. Oh, well, what community is he part of or she part of? Oh, Dad, I know them from school. I know them from religious school. Or I know them from soccer. And a part of me says, you know, that those are all different communities to which you are part of.
Sure.
And there's something really amazing. And I keep saying to my 8-year-old, I can't wait till you get to youth group because it's just so awesome.
Yeah. And it's a place for kids outside of school and outside of their homes where they can share in maybe some of their fears and even their doubts. Mm-hmm. You know, we go through a pretty big system with our confirmation, not as long as like the Catholic Church or anything like mm-hmm. that, but we do it for a semester. And one of the things we have the kids do is write their own creed. So as Christians, the Nicene Creed is what we believe, right? We say we believe in one God, the Father, the Almighty, and they get to start with, well, we believe, and this is what we believe about God, and this is what we believe about the church, and what we believe about the Christian faith, and they write their own creed as a group. And it's really interesting to see what they believe about this triune God that we believe in, right? Mm-hmm. And it's really profound and so well done. They're smart. Gosh, are they smart. But for them to be able to take it and say, this is my faith, you know, this is my thing here that I'm doing. I might have come for my parents because they said, I'm 14 or 15 and I need to be here now. It's time to get confirmed, but this is what I believe.
And I think it's just such an interesting dynamic that we've done in, you know, the 21st century. Because if you go back a generation ago, maybe the understanding was, you know, we don't question our creed.
No.
You know, it's this is what it is. You know, we have the same 13 attributes of God within Judaism that says this is what we believe. These are our principles. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, those are words. So at the end of the day, what meaning do we attribute to it today? And I think that the nice shift that has occurred is to be able to say, you know, write your own.
Yes.
You know, we do this in the synagogue.
We give them the parameters, obviously. I mean, we're a Christian community,
sure.
And this is what we believe. But let's talk about what this means.
And I think,
now put
I
it
think
in your own words.
To be able to unpack that, to be able to say, okay, you know.
Or say, why?
You know,
why?
Absolutely.
Why, Father Christian? Why do we believe this? Why do
you know,
we do
this?
Why
our,
do we say this?
With our confirmation class as well, because we talk to our kids about, you know, let's just break it out to the Ten Commandments, right?
Sure.
So we break those Ten Commandments, but what does it really mean to honor and remember Shabbat? What does it really mean that, you know, why does God say of the first two commandments, I am the Lord your God, and you shall have no other gods but me? Are they not the same thing? Why are they two separate commandments? And beyond the level of the law for us to say, well, this is the commandment, this is what it is, you just don't question, as opposed to our kid, you know, asking the question to our kids, what value, what meaning do you get out of this? What does it mean to love God?
Well, the last thing we want is to tell them, and so they're going through the motions and doing it to check a box, right?
Absolutely.
We want it to be their own.
And I think that that's the shift as well that's occurred, which is to say to our kids, we value you. And I think that that's one of the missing links that has been of many generations, which is to be able to say as our youth, you know, you're independent now. I mean, although you're not fully emancipated and obviously you're not, you know, an adult that says, I'm going to go live on my own and do whatever. I'm still dependent upon my family, but you are a fully functional thinking adult. Mm-hmm. You know, we do this at Bar Bat Mitzvah where at the end, you know, you've become, in the Jewish perspective, you're a legal
adult.
You're an adult.
Yeah. Made in the image of God.
Absolutely.
And no longer are
your parents held responsible for you. You are held responsible for your
yourself.
Own actions. And I think especially with the church as well, to be able to say to our kids, you know, we can understand traditionally what, you know, our respective faiths say about certain things and in a youth program, but at the end of the day, I'm more concerned about where you're at.
Right.
What you're exposed to, what you are experiencing. How do we deal with anti-Christian, you know, behavior or sentiments or anti-Jewish, anti-Semitism that's obviously much more prevalent today and more recently. But how do we combat it? How do we talk about it? And it's not being adult-driven, that it is youth-driven, that it's those conversations.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and I know Father Christian has talked about it when we talked about it the other day, of, you know, the coffee shop talk, which I think is great, gets our kids out of the church.
And it's missional.
Absolutely.
It's missional. So.
So, Alexis, if we had a parting word for, because we are running out of time, what you think our youth should be doing in the future in terms of how do we access, how do we inspire, how do we keep the youth going? Any thoughts on that?
Pursue them. Continue to pursue them. Don't let up. Numbers are low. Don't get focused on the numbers. Meet them where they are. You got to go to them.
Absolutely.
You got to go to them.
Alexis, thank you, because I think that is something that as we end our show today, which is, you know, don't be focused on numbers. Don't be focused on how many I can get. Be focused on the content, on the quality, and how we can inspire, even if we have one student. That's one student who has the opportunity to be inspired and to really, you know, focus through. And word of mouth is very, very big in today's world.
And partner with your neighbors.
With your neighbors, absolutely.
At Temple Beit Hayom, partner with your neighbors.
I love it. I love it.
That's where the fun happens.
That is where the fun happens. So again, join us next week as we come back. I think that this is a longer conversation that I think we should have some of our youth on. But again, Alexis, on behalf of a priest, a rabbi, we thank you immensely for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.